Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM. Talkspace.com/boom. B-O-O-M.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. A little bit of a different show today. I'm Sean Hyken of Bleacher Report and NBC Sports, co-host of the Locked On Bulls podcast. I don't have Cody with me today, but we did sort of a Locked On Podcast Network crossover collaboration episode today. Josh Lloyd, who hosts the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast, which you should definitely go check out if you are into fantasy or you just kind of want a thorough breaking down of every single team in the league from a production standpoint. If that's the kind of thing you're into, you should definitely check that out. He does a great job with that. But he, you know, leading up to training camp, leading up to the season, he's doing his previews of each individual team with people from all over the Locked On Podcast Network. And so he asked me to come on and talk about the Bulls, just kind of what their roster is, what some of the playing time battles might look like, who I might expect might have a breakout season, just some general expectations for the year. It's a really good conversation. It lasts a little over an hour or so, so it's a little bit longer than our usual episodes, but I think it was a good conversation. So we're just going to give that to you here. Cody and I will be back with a new episode early next week. As always, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review. You can also find us on Stitcher, Audio Boom, Google Play, TuneIn. Email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com with any basketball questions or advertising inquiries, and follow us on Twitter at lockedonbulls. Follow me on Twitter at Hyken. Follow Cody on Twitter at Cody Westerlund. Like us on Facebook. We're trying to get our Facebook likes up. But yeah, so enjoy this conversation with me and Josh Lloyd.
We're back for what's becoming an annual tradition now, the team preview podcasts. We're doing, as we've done the last two seasons, 30 individual podcast for each team where I get someone on to chat with me about said team, and we go through all of the storylines, all of the players, all of our thoughts on those players and how things may shake out during the season. This season, as I'm part of the Locked On Podcast Network, which I do recommend that you guys check out all of the other shows, especially the shows that relate to your teams, I'm getting the hosts on for these other shows, for these team-specific podcasts. And to start things off, I'm going to go with a team that's very close to my heart and is, of course, the Chicago Bulls. So to talk Chicago Bulls, I'm joined by one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Bulls podcast, a writer at NBC Sports and Bleacher Report. I'm sure you all know him. It's Sean Hyken. Sean, how are you?
Good to be with you, man. How are you doing?
I'm very, very well, Sean. It's good to have you on. We're going to kick things off by talking about the Bulls, obviously. You host Locked On Bulls with Cody.
Westerlund, yeah.
Cody Westerlund. How's things going over on that show? What have you got anything interesting coming up, or what was your last podcast on Locked On Bulls?
Well, it's been an interesting summer for the Bulls, just from a standpoint of covering the team. Because last year, I mean, we're going to get into like the specific stuff about their roster and if they're going to be good. I'm sure we're going to get into that on this. But last year, it was the most miserable team to cover because they weren't very good. They went 42-40. They just missed the playoffs, which they hadn't missed the playoffs since 2008. And it was kind of the worst of both worlds because they were the 14th seed in the lottery. So they weren't even bad enough to have a chance to get like one of the Ben Simmons or Brandon Ingram type of prospects. But they're also, like, by the end of the year, especially like once Joakim Noah got injured in January, and then he, you know, he had just shoulder surgery, and then he was away from the team for a lot of the rest of the year doing rehab in New York. There was like nobody good to cover on the team. Everybody was just so checked out. It was just miserable going into that locker room year night after night. And so this summer was kind of interesting because, I mean, I still don't know how good the Bulls are going to be, but having Rondo in there now and having Dwayne Wade, and plus, you know, with Jimmy Butler having just played in the Olympics, it's going to at least be interesting.
Well, it's definitely going to be interesting. It might be good interesting. It might be bad interesting. Like, who knows how it's going to turn out, but I'm going to watch Bulls games. You're going to watch Bulls games. Everyone else is going to want to watch Bulls games to at least see. People love watching a car crash. They're driving on a highway. There's traffic stopped, and it's only because people are looking to see why is there a car on fire on the side of the road. And that might be why the Bulls draw a lot of attention this season. Maybe it works out. I'm pessimistic. You're a little pessimistic about the fit as well. What we're going to do in all of these team previews, Sean, is on Basketball Monster, once we open the site, which is going to be the 4th of September now, myself and Kyle and Matt, we're doing a series called 30 Questions, which it was going to be 30 questions, but we decided to each ask each other 30 questions, one per team. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn those three questions for each team onto my guest host on all these team previews and get an additional perspective. If you want to hear mine and Kyle's and Matt's, it'll be written up on the site. But I'm going to turn it to you, Sean, with our three questions on the Chicago Bulls that are sort of burning issues, I think, with the team heading into this season. The first one, will Rajon Rondo, Dwayne Wade, and Jimmy Butler help each other's production, or will it hurt each other's production from a statistical basis?
I would imagine it'll probably hurt their production just from a per-game standpoint in terms of points. I mean, Rondo is going to have plenty of opportunities to get his assist numbers up because he led the league, obviously, in Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade on the court with him. The area where I think it might actually help them, and I don't know how applicable this is in a fantasy standpoint, but I think having Dwayne Wade there is going to help Jimmy Butler a lot on the defensive end because he's not going to have to do as much offensively, so he's going to be able to exert more of his energy on defense. But for the purposes of looking at these guys from a fantasy standpoint, I don't see how they're not a little bit redundant. None of them can shoot. They all kind of need the ball in their hands.
Yeah, that was a big part of, in terms of fantasy, what helped Jimmy Butler's value last year is that he was averaging almost 5 assists a game, and down the stretch he was at over 6 a game. And with Rondo there and with Wade there, there's just, I can't see any way that he is able to replicate those sort of assist numbers because he's just not going to have, he's not going to have the guys to give the ball to necessarily knock down open shots, and he's just not going to have the ball in his hand as often. So say he had the ball in his hand 60% of the plays last year, which is a completely made up number. There's no way he approaches that when last year he was sharing it with Rose and now he's sharing it with Wade and with Rondo. So even if it goes down to 50% or 45%, the assist numbers, they surely have to drop.
Yeah, it's not going to be great. And he's also just, you know, because having a guy like Dwayne Wade there who has the ball in his hands a lot, not just from the assist standpoint, but just from he's not going to have as many shot attempts and he's not going to score as many points.
Is there any hope that Butler can develop into a horrible three-point shooter, which he currently is, into a below average or maybe even average three-point shooter with guys like Rondo and Wade maybe drawing some defensive attention away?
Well, a year ago, when the season when he really had his breakout year and won most improved player, he shot 37.8% from three, which was, it's just pretty good. That's not, you know, that's not like elite, but that's, you know, more than respectable. You have to put someone on him. And then last year that just fell off a cliff. He only shot 31% from three last year. And so we're kind of, if he can, I think it's not unreasonable to expect that he can get back to at least, you know, league average somewhere around 35 or 36. But I will say that, you know, watching him this past month in Rio in the Olympics, his shot did not look like it was any less broken than it was last year. And I don't know whether that's going to suddenly change when he gets to camp, but I would say, I mean, I think it's within the realm of possibility that his 3-point shooting takes, you know, bounces back a little bit from where it was last year, but I don't know if it's going to get back to where it was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that's. I suppose no one really ever knows that, but the track record of Butler's shooting is not great. And as you mentioned in Rio, he didn't look super switched on with it. He didn't look super sort of locked in as to what he was doing in terms of getting that shot right. Everything can change in the next couple of months, but at this point, yeah, faith in it happening is not high for me. The next question we're going to look at, Sean, is one that I know that plenty of fantasy owners want to know, and I'm sure every sort of Bulls owner. Or not owner. I'm sure wish we were the Bulls owner. Every Bulls fan, wants to know. Nikola Mirotic, can he gain Fred Hoiberg's trust? Because last season, and this is something I was very emotionally invested into and professionally invested into as well, is that I would watch every game that Mirotic would play, and or every Bulls game, and every time that he would go out there, if he missed his first couple of shots, then he'd get the old hook and he'd sit on the bench for about the next 15 minutes. If he hit his two out of his first three, then Hoiberg would let him play 30 minutes. Otherwise, he'd play 18 minutes. Can he get enough trust to actually go out there and shoot with confidence? And even if he misses some shots, stay on the court?
Well, that's going to be the only real positional battle in terms of the starting lineup, because I think four of the five starting spots for the Bulls are locked in with, you know, obviously Rondo, Butler, and Wade, and then it's pretty safe to assume Robin Lopez is going to start at center. So the only real question mark is whether Mirotić or Gibson is going to start at power forward. And I would tend to say that Mirotić, if I had to guess, is going to get the spot, just at least to start out the season, because he can shoot from the outside and literally nobody else in the Bulls starting lineup can. So just having one guy there who's a threat to do that is going to be something I think Fred Hoiberg is going to want to have in the lineup. But as far as whether he can earn the trust, I mean, as you said, it was kind of last year, it was just kind of based on how he started off a game. He would miss his first couple and then his confidence would just fall off a cliff, and that would happen for games at a time. And he's admitted that before too, that like his confidence, if he is in a slump, it can carry over from game to game. So, you know, he needs to get off to a good start. But I mean, if you look at his numbers by month, his monthly splits, he didn't shoot great in November. He shot like his 3-point percentage, 29 in November, 30 in December. So that's pretty bad. And then January 40, he didn't play at all in February, but because he had that appendectomy and then he had the complications from the surgery. But when he came back in March, 43% from three in March, 46.9% in April.
Yeah, he was ridiculous towards the end of the year. Look, his post All-Star splits, he averaged 14 points in 26 minutes, but he hit almost three triples a game in that time. He almost got,
and he looked really good in Rio too.
He did. He looked, and this is what he can do. He can take over games. But my problem with the way Hoiberg dealt with him last season is that he as you said, he affected his confidence, and Mirotić said that. And I'm very much a believer in, you know, process over results. And just because the shot didn't fall for the first two, it doesn't mean that it's not going to fall for his next three. But Hoiberg didn't seem to grasp it. So he's missed two shots. He's done. And then I feel that played into Mirotic's mindset. And then he would say, can't miss the shot, can't miss my first shot, can't miss my first shot. And then yeah, he would get tight, he would miss it, and then he'd sit down because he didn't have the confidence that if he missed the shot, he would get any more playing time after that. And that I think that's something Hoiberg has to realize. I think he sort of did towards the end of the year when there were injuries, yes, but Mirotić was, you know, close to the Bulls' best player, especially when Butler wasn't in the lineup towards the end of the season. And it's just something that has to change for me.
Right, and that's, I think the thing that's going to help him out is that the front court rotation is a lot less crowded this year. Pau Gasol and Joakim Noah are obviously both gone, and Taj Gibson, you know, long term, I think there's a chance if the Bulls season falls apart, he gets moved at the deadline, but I certainly don't think he's going to be with the team past this season just because of, you know, his age and what his contract is going to have to be when he's a free agent. But, you know, there's a lot more of a clear path for Mirotić that to get a lot of minutes than there was last season. So I think that's going to be good for him.
Now, you mentioned the appendectomy that Mirotić had and then complications from that surgery. What is up with the Bulls medical staff? Did they get their medical license from the upstairs Hollywood medical school?
You know, that's the question. Here's the thing. It's not like there's been some turnover. The old joke, like back during a couple of years ago, like when Luol Deng kept being listed as day to day after having a spinal procedure.
Yeah, and, the joke was hashtag.
Right, and the joke was that the hashtag on Twitter was Fred cleared him, but Fred Tedeschi, who was their trainer at the time, he's not there anymore, and they still kind of have these issues where, like, you know, remember Mike Dunleavy right before training camp had back surgery, and he was basically out until February. Originally, he was put at 10 to 12 weeks, which would have had him back in, like, middle of November, early December. He was out until February, and it just, and then, you know, you go back a year before that, Joakim Noah has his knee surgery the summer after he wins Defensive Player of the Year and was an MVP candidate in 2013-14, and then the whole next year, that injury just kind of lingers on. Like, it just always seems to happen like that with the Bulls.
Yeah, I don't know if it's because I'm paying extra attention to the Bulls as a fan as well, but like even Jimmy Butler, when he hurt his knee, it looked really bad, and the Bulls come, nah, he's right, he's all good, day to day, he'll be fine, and then the next day, and I'm sorry, he's out for a month. Like, just work it out. Like, I don't know if they're just trying to appease people in a PR sense. I don't know what they're trying to do, but everything that they say, I just have real hesitance in believing it.
Well, what's funny is that, and he's obviously not on the team anymore, but the one guy that they were super cautious with at every single turn was Derrick Rose. They would never try to, you know, push him to play before he was ready to play, or if a hamstring was bothering him and it was minor, he would just kind of sit out for precautionary reasons. But then on the other end of the spectrum, like, and this is going back to when Tom Thibodeau was the coach, at one point that season, Taj Gibson just casually let slip after a game in February or March that he had been playing through a torn thumb ligament for a month, and he mentioned it to Tibbs, and Tibbs said, where are you from? And Taj said, Brooklyn. And he's like, okay, well, play like it.
Oh, yeah, well, that's not a good mix when your training staff is doing that, and then your coach is saying, oh, just play through. And Gibson probably had, he's bone chips in his ankles at that point as well. And look, he's a real warrior. He's been a great servant for the Bulls. But some of these things that the players go through, and then you have the idiots on the internet claiming players are soft when they miss games, and that's just a... Oh, it is such a bugbear of mine. I cannot deal with it because if
anything... Right, and it's like they can't win either way because if a guy sits out a game that he physically could play because of a precautionary reason, like Derrick Rose did, he's soft. But then if he plays and he's not as good, it's, oh, this guy sucks, trade him.
Yeah, or if he plays and then makes the injury worse, oh, he's injury prone, he's brittle, he's made of China. Like, which one is it? Like, it's
right, and especially like the last couple of years covering the Bulls with Derrick Rose... like, the way people talk about him is just so bizarre to me. It's like, I mean, with most guys, when they get hurt, it's like, oh, I mean, that sucks. Like, you hate to see that happen to anybody. But, like, literally, every single time last year, I would tweet, from Fred, like Fred Hoiberg says before a game that Derrick Rose is sitting out tonight for precautionary reasons. I'd get the same four, like, Derrick Rose signature shoe. Buy this Derrick Rose signature shoe. And it's a picture of, like, a walking boot or, like, oh, well, clinch, classic Derrick Rose. Like, he didn't do anything to anybody. He got injured. He's tried to come back from it. He hasn't been as good, and he doesn't want to risk his long-term career for, I mean, like, it's really weird how he's kind of held to a different standard than everybody else. But yeah, I'm totally with you. I will never call anybody who has worked hard enough to make it to the NBA soft because they don't want to play through an injury.
And you said it, Derrick Rose, like he's passing that baton over to Anthony Davis as the guy that no matter what happens, if he misses 1 second, if he has to leave a game before halftime and then comes back after halftime because he dove into the chairs and cut his head open, then, oh, the guy's soft, he's brittle, why is he diving for the ball? Yet if he didn't dive for the ball, it'd be, oh, he's got no heart, he doesn't play for the team, he doesn't care. It's just
I was like blown away by how the narrative shifted on Anthony Davis last season because he... Like, because, you know, going into the season, he was getting, like, MVP buzz. Like, people were saying, oh, this guy could be MVP this year. And then, you know, obviously the Pelicans were terrible because literally their entire roster was injured the whole year. And then Anthony Davis, you know, has shoulder surgery and he misses all this stuff. It's like he didn't choose to get hurt. He didn't choose to have every single one of his teammates be hurt throughout the year, or at least all their guys that weren't, like, D-leaguers that they brought in on 10-day contracts. But... like this narrative somehow started to emerge from certain outlets that, Anthony Davis is not a real leader because the Pelicans aren't taking a step forward. Like, you guys know that the entire team was injured, right?
Well, not to make this into a total Pelicans thing, but I was writing something on the Pelicans the other day, and over the past three seasons, I think the Pelicans have been on the court for 8,800 minutes, and Holiday, Davis, and Tyreke Evans have played a total of 1,000 minutes on the court together out of 8,000 minutes. Which is ridiculous to me. That is just such a...
That's not a lot.
For your three best players to be on the court for, 10% of the time, or a little bit over 10% of the time, is just not... It's just not good. But I don't want to talk too many Pelicans things because we're going to talk about that when we do the Pelicans preview. Let's get on to our third question in this section, Sean. Bobby Portis, he was very, very hyped coming into last season, especially in a fantasy point of view. Because of his, I think he's got a very aesthetically appealing game. His intensity, his, I don't know, lack of care for common protocols and just in general insanity. Where does he sit? He's behind Mirotić at the moment. He's behind Taj Gibson at the moment. What's his future at? Is it as a four? Is it as the five? Can he leapfrog Gibson? Does it require a trade? Does he play some minutes next to Mirotić? What do we see from Portis moving into this season? And how do the Bulls view him moving forward, do you think?
Well, the Bulls really like Portis long term. I don't know what I literally have no idea. You could tell me he's going to play 25 minutes a game and be, their full time backup power forward this year and play some minutes at five, or you could tell me he's just like barely going to be able to get on the floor, and I would believe it. He's very talented, but he's also extremely raw. He had that one stretch of games in December last year when he finally started getting consistent playing time, where, he was put up double doubles a couple of games in a row, and he looked like he was really, establishing himself. And then I'm just kind of what happens with rookies. Teams start watching film on the guy once he starts playing, and then they know how to defend him, and then his production kind of fell off after that. But you know, what I need is, I mean, he's a pretty good rebounder. That's been the biggest thing. But he needs to get a lot better defensively. I think he has the tools to do that, but he has to get better defensively. And then he also has to develop a more consistent jump shot. I think that's a thing that we've seen in flashes from him, but it's not really something he was able to do consistently. But, I mean, all the stuff that he did wrong last year was rookie stuff. I think he's going to be good long term.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And a lot of people will come out, and it's a very biased point of view. They'll say, you know, we need to get Portis more minutes because he's a defender and Mirotić isn't. Where that's just basically a stereotype based on the fact that Mirotić is white and European, so he's a poor defender. But he was a much better defender than Portis last season. Not to say that Portis won't become a better defender than him, because there's every chance that he will. But Mirotić is, and I've said this a million times, Mirotić is not a bad defender. He is a slightly above average defender, but he's definitely, people make out like he's Enes Kanter, and he's definitely not a bad defender at all. And he's
not Doug McDermott even. Doug McDermott is a terrible defender.
He's dreadful.
Mirotić isn't elite by any means, but you can put him on somebody and he's not going to just get blown by every single time.
Yeah, you can feel confident that he will hold his own half of the time. Or maybe, you know, at least be able to draw even in a contest against most players. Beat some, you know, get beaten by some others, but he's not going to be just a turnstile who's, you know, flailing his arms around so someone can just go straight by him. He's not that sort of guy. Whereas McDermott, yeah, dreadful. And Portis, dreadful last season as well. Now, we saw Portis be able to stretch the floor a little bit in summer league and really took, you know, a lot of his shots from deep. Is that something you think that he's going to be asked to do this season, or is that just more of a let's experiment in summer league and see how it works out?
Well, I think he's going to have to do a lot more of that because, you know, as we talked about with the Rondo-Butler-Wade dynamic, there's really not a lot of threats from the outside. So if that's something, even if it's not shooting threes, even if he can just step out and hit, you know, an 18-footer, 19-footer, 20-footer, that's going to be something that would, you know, help him get a lot more minutes, as opposed to, you know, he's in this battle with Taj Gibson and Nico Mirotić for minutes. So, hey, you know, having Portis have the ability to shoot from at least a little bit of range, I think would be something that would be an advantage for him.
Definitely. All right, let's talk about the NBA draft. The Bulls, as you mentioned before, had pick 14. There were a couple of guys that I was really interested in the Bulls acquiring when it came to draft night. I was interested in them getting Wade Baldwin, especially after the Derrick Rose deal. I wanted them to see him try and develop him. I was interested in Timothée Luwawu-Cabarrot, and Denzel Valentine was the other one who I was really sort of focusing in and wanting the Bulls to pick at pick 14. They went with Valentine, and I was pretty excited about it. This is before all the free agency stuff sort of went down. What do you make of Valentine's role now, in the future? Does he have a hope of ever being an NBA starter, or is his defense so poor and his defensive tools not there enough that he can develop them?
Well, the thing that it's going to come down to is his outside shooting. He shot 44% from three in college, and that's something, as we've already discussed, that the Bulls just don't really have a lot of on their roster. So if he can come in and start hitting threes right away, then that's going to be a way for him to stay on the floor. And he's also a very good ball handler for a wing, but, you know, again, they have Rajon Rondo, so I don't think he's going to have a lot of opportunities to play point guard because, you know, Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler both like to be playmakers as well. So I don't know if he's going to get a ton of minutes. I think he's certainly going to have every opportunity because he was a lottery pick and they really like him. And I don't know if he's going to be, you know, develop a consistent enough all around game. I think that his biggest strength right now is his shooting.
Yeah, and he struggled with that at summer league, but he did show a lot of flashes of that ball handling and passing ability and vision, which, again, it's not really going to be utilized this season. So he's going to be more in a spot-up sort of role is what I'm understanding, the way that they're going to look to use him in that backup wing off the bench. Or not even wing. He'll be more backing up Wade, and then you'll have McDermott playing more of the three. And those two guys together, that could be a real nightmare on the defensive end, though.
Yeah, it's certainly not going to be good. I mean, I think the hope, and he said, Denzel said at his introductory press conference that he thinks he's a versatile defender and he can guard 1 through 4. I haven't really seen that in what I've watched of him at the college level. So we'll see if that pans out. But, and, you know, the athleticism is certainly something to worry about. But, yeah, it has a potential to be a disaster on defense. But, you know, if he can be good enough offensively that it makes up for it, then, you know, he should be able to get some minutes.
I don't see him as being big enough to really guard fours, but yeah, he's
I don't either.
He's not huge at all. Like, he's, when I say not huge, like, he's almost, you know, when I was standing next to him, I felt like he was a relatively normal sized human, not like, you know, standing next to someone who's just gigantic, like majority of NBA players. Like, you can stand face to face with Valentine and chat to him and go, okay, he's tall, but he's not He's not what is happening with this freak of nature standing in front of him. And guarding a four, he's not big either. He's not, doesn't look overly strong. That could end in a lot of tears. Paul Zipser, a German wing, played for Bayern Munich last season. The Bulls got him with pick 48. He's barely going to see the court. I think he spends most of his time with the Windy City Bulls. But I think that Zipser, or I was very interested in Zipser. I thought he was going to be a real second round steal for whatever team got him. The Bulls happened to get him. He's another guy, sort of like Valentine, who can, not quite to the same degree, but he can do some of the ball handling. He can pass, he can shoot, and he's a pretty good defender at this stage already. What do you know about Zipser, or any ideas of how the Bulls are looking to use him?
So I have a fun factoid about Paul Zipser. This is the one thing that I really know solidly about him, is that he has an extra bone in one of his feet, and he had to have Adidas design a special shoe to accommodate it.
I did read something about that. I wouldn't have been able to recall it, but now that you've mentioned, I did read that there was something weird about one of his feet. But he is he's going to be interesting to see. Unless there's injuries, I don't think we see much of him with the Bulls.
I think he's going to be spending a lot of time in Hoffman Estates playing for the Windy City Bulls.
Yeah, but I think that's exactly what they should be doing, and that's the advantage of having your own D-League team, is the guys like Zipser, who is coming across with a fair bit of potential and the ability, again, as a 3-and-D wing who can handle the ball. Like those three things together can be really useful, even if it's just when he eventually gets to the NBA and he tops out as being a guy who plays 17 or 18 minutes. It can be really useful, and he's got a very nice sort of statistical profile as well from a fantasy point of view for people playing in deeper leagues, that Zipser could develop into a guy who plays, you know, in that not necessarily Mike Dunleavy sort of role, because he's probably a better defender than what Dunleavy was in the last couple of seasons, but a guy who shoots, a guy who fits in next to other high usage ball handlers like Butler, who we imagine remains with the team long term.
I would not draft him in fantasy this year unless it's like a keeper league where you get like minor leagues and stuff. That's just, but I mean, long term, sure. I mean, if you can get a guy who plays 17 to 20 minutes a game as a rotation player with the 48th pick in the draft, that's a win.
Yeah, and I think it's a huge win. I was really happy with what the Bulls did during the draft. And then we hit free agency, and we had we spoke about this in Vegas, Sean. The Bulls brought in Rajon Rondo, they brought in Dwayne Wade, they brought in Isaiah Cannon. Now, the Rondo signing, I've ranted about that plenty on this show. The Wade signing, I don't hate it as an individual move, but paired with the Rondo signing, and I don't think, if the Bulls knew they were getting Wade, I don't think they necessarily would have pursued Rondo. I don't know that for a fact, but I think if they knew they were getting Wade, they wouldn't have gone after Rondo. They would have gotten themselves a different type of point guard. But how did you view the Rondo signing when I saw the tweet come out with that picture of him sitting in the airport with the Bulls iPad cover? I just went, oh, please, please, let's just hope the meeting didn't go well. What did you think when you saw all that stuff happen?
Well, I just didn't really understand the fit, because the kind of point guard that Fred Hoiberg wants in his offense is somebody who, you know, somebody who can shoot, somebody who, you know, can push the pace. Rondo at this point in his career is not, and he's never been a good shooter, and he's gotten a lot slower since the ACL injury a number of years ago that he had when he was in Boston. But I think that was just kind of a case of, after they traded Rose, you know, they don't feel comfortable enough, because the Bulls are at this point, even after they traded Rose, they're not really ready to rebuild. That's just not something that this organization likes to do. They remember kind of the years right after Michael Jordan retired, when those teams were so bad, and they don't want to do that. They wouldn't want to just completely punt on making the playoffs, and they weren't really comfortable with having Jerian Grant and Spencer Dinwiddie playing the bulk of their minutes at point guard. And so this year's free agent crop of point guards was, frankly, not good, outside of Mike Conley, who I don't think was ever really seriously going to consider leaving Memphis. And so, yeah, I mean, I think Rondo, at a certain point, you know, Jeremy Lin goes to Brooklyn, a couple of the other guys that are out there go off the board pretty quickly, and I guess Rondo is the last guy that was there, so they just kind of said, okay, let's do this. And it's not a long-term risk. It's a two-year deal, but I believe only $3 million of the second year is guaranteed. So it's essentially a one-year deal that they can get out of pretty easily if it doesn't go well. But I think it was just a case of, they wanted one veteran point guard, and he was the biggest name that was left, and so that's what they did.
So Rondo comes in. He had this, you know, resurgent statistical season last season in Sacramento, but he was still not good. He was poor offensively. He was, you know, inattentive defensively, and that's probably the kindest word that I can use in terms of what he did defensively. He was divisive in the locker room, on the court. He got into trouble with the NBA regarding Bill Kennedy. There was nothing really great.
Yeah, that was not a good look, was it?
No, it's not. Especially when you're on a team that's already got these sort of image issues with players and locker room problems, and then he goes out and does that. That team. There's so much I can't wait to do.
And the thing with the Bill Kennedy thing is like that's not a word you want to go around calling somebody anyway. I remember a number of years ago, Joakim Noah did that, and he apologized for it, but. That's not a word you want to go around calling somebody anyway, but especially not when it's official that, I mean, Bill Kennedy hadn't come out publicly by that time, but it was pretty well known in NBA circles, like within the league, that Bill Kennedy was gay. And I'm pretty confident in saying that Rondo knew that when he did that. So the fact that, I mean, it seemed like that from that sense, it just seemed a lot more malicious and a lot more premeditated. So that was definitely not a good look.
Yeah, it wasn't great. And then he had the I'm trying to think of the right word here. He had the inauspicious season. I can't even think of what word I'm trying to use. Basically, he made all his teammates worse last year. That's a concern, because
It was like the point guard version of the season that Pau Gasol had for the Bulls last year. He basically put up 18 and 12 every night, and the Bulls made a big deal out of his double-double streak, and he made the All-Star team because he put up good counting stats. But, Cody and I talked about this on the podcast a few weeks ago when we were talking about rebounding and the kind of impact Robin Lopez would have. The Bulls, I mean, even though Pau Gasol averaged, 11, 12 rebounds, whatever he averaged last year, the Bulls as a team rebounded worse when he was on the floor than when he was off. So it was the kind of thing where he put up good numbers, but he didn't make his team better when he was on the court. And that's kind of the same thing as what there was with Rondo. The thing that blew my mind about Rondo's season last year is him shooting 36% from three, which is a total outlier for him. And I've had Bulls fans hit me up on Twitter ever since the signing to say, hey, look, he shot 36%. You can't talk about it. He's not a shooter. It's like, okay, but that was a total outlier. I'll take the 9 years of him not being a good three-point shooter over the 1 year of him being a good three-point shooter.
Yeah, I've had people say the same thing to me when I criticize the Bulls for having no backcourt shooting, that Rondo hit so many. Oh, here's a question for you, Sean. Who's going to have the higher three-point percentage this season, Butler or Rondo?
Butler.
Okay. Yeah, I feel pretty confident that Butler should be able to.
I don't think it's going to be particularly high, but it's going to be more like
31 versus 30.
Or, on the more generous end, 35 versus 31 or something like that. I don't think either of them is going to be particularly high. If either of them can get to 35 or 36 and sustain that for a season where at least league average, where you can't just completely ignore them. You can't do the Tony Allen thing where you just don't even have somebody guard them from the outside, or Andre Robertson. Like, that's just, if either one of them can even get to that point, I think that would be a success for the Bulls.
Definitely. All right. So Wade comes across homecoming. He had issues with the Heat front office, which weren't just from this summer. They'd been sort of brewing over the last couple of years. There's been always empty threats until this year about he's going to go somewhere else. They're not giving him a contract. The negotiations are dragging out. He finally came. He came home to Chicago. How does Dwayne Wade fit in? At 34 years of age, he probably, and when I'm looking at projections, I think he plays less minutes this season. He played a lot of games last year. I think the most he played in the last five seasons. That, we'll talk about Rondo's outlier in three-point percentage. That probably is Wade's outlier in terms of his health. How does he fit in here? He said he wants to be the second banana behind Butler, and it's Butler's team still. Do you believe that? Do you think that holds true? How does he fit with this roster?
Well, that was a really smart political play by Wade when he said that at his press conference, that it's Jimmy Butler's team. Because, I mean, he's been like, whatever drama there is with this team, whatever dysfunction there is, that's nothing for Wade. He was on that, that big three team in Miami that was so awkward when it first came together. And eventually he was just like, what? LeBron's a better player than me. I'm going to defer to LeBron on the court. And he was okay with it because they were winning championships. With Butler, I think Wade is smart enough at this point that he knows where he is in his career and where Jimmy Butler is in his career. And especially with just kind of the issues that there were last year with whether Jimmy or Derrick Rose was the guy and, who was the first option and all that kind of stuff. So I think Wade is going to do everything to try to make this work. Now, as far as, how much he plays, I think the Bulls, and you can do this when you have Jimmy Butler and you don't have, it's not like what the Heat had last year where you still had to depend on Wade to be your engine every single night. He played 74 games last year, which was, like you said, a total outlier for him in the last 5 or 6 years. But I think the Bulls are going to be pretty conservative with him, and he even kind of hinted at this at his introductory press conference. They don't have a specific number in mind of games he's going to play or minutes he's going to play, but you know, he's not going to be playing 30 or 35 minutes a game. He's going to sit out some back-to-backs. He's going to sit out a lot of precautionary things where he maybe could play, but like if his knee is slightly bothering him, he'll sit out and just to rest it. I think we're going to see a lot of that.
Yeah, I think there's almost no chance that he gets over 30 minutes a night. I think he played 31 last season, and I don't think he gets to 70 games. But the Bulls, for as much as I just bashed on their medical staff, when players have got these sort of issues, that they will, you know, especially if the player is keen to sit out a game because, hey, it's not feeling right, they won't, you know, force it necessarily. So, and Wade's going to have complete control over his body as well, and he knows at his age that, you know, he's 34 years of age. He's not going to be able to get out there and play 80 games at 35 minutes. It's almost physically impossible at this point. Isaiah Cannon comes in. He has one skill, and he's not great at it. He's okay at it, and that's shooting three-pointers. He doesn't hit them all the time. He hits them sometimes. Does he become the backup point guard on this team, or do you think they give it to Jerry and Grant? Cannon is a disaster defensively. He's a disaster dribbling. He's a disaster passing. How does he fit in? But yeah, he shoots threes, and that's something that the Bulls do need. But where does he fit?
Well, he's just kind of like the classic type of player that the Bulls try to have at least one of on the roster every year. A few years ago, it was Nate Robinson, and then the next year it was DJ Augustine, and then the last couple of years it's been Aaron Brooks. So, you know, I think that's kind of what Isaiah Cannon is going to be for him. It's going to be the kind of thing he's just going to kind of come off the bench. He's going to be your kind of change of pace guy who just comes in, gets buckets. If he's hot, they'll keep riding him. If he's not hot, he might get a DNP some nights. I would say that something has gone really horribly wrong if he is your full-time backup point guard. I think Jerry and Grant, especially because he was the guy the Bulls got back in the Derrick Rose trade, and he was also somebody that I know from both what they've said on the record and also from talking to people within the organization on my own, that Jerry and Grant was somebody that they were very high on in the draft in 2015. So he's a guy that they really like and they want to develop, and so I think he's going to have every opportunity to be the backup point guard. Now, Cannon is probably just going to be like I said, a change of pace guy. Is going to come in, play 15 minutes, just try to be a spark off the bench offensively and not really do anything else.
Yeah, I agree with you about Cannon's role and Grant's role. And yeah, I've heard similar things about the Bulls and Grant come draft time. I was big onto Grant as well at draft time. And I thought that he had a real chance to take some minutes away from Jose Calderon last season. Didn't work. The coaching obviously didn't favor him last season in New York. But he's here now. And he's, I don't know, he looked decent sometimes at Summer League. He looked average at other times, but he's got to develop his shot as well. Like, he was a horrendous shooter last season, but he's got talent. He can pass, he can run pick and rolls as well. So I think that he fits into that backup role nicely. He came across in that trade with Robin Lopez, where we sent Derrick Rose and Justin Holiday across to the Knicks. Lopez, you mentioned before, he is a very underrated player. Look, I think, and you can give me your opinion on this, I think that he's probably the best player involved in that trade. How do you view it?
This is something where, you know, this is something where, like, you don't really realize how good Robin Lopez is unless you watch a lot of these teams. Because, I mean, if you look at his counting stats, they're not very impressive. But I was looking at these, and I'm also, like, I'm from Portland, and so I still kind of pay attention to the Blazers a lot. And so I had kind of watched him a lot the last few years when he was in Portland before he was in New York. But the last several years, even if he only averages 8 rebounds a game or whatever he averages, his team's always, it's like the opposite of Pau Gasol. His individual rebounding numbers are not that impressive, but his teams always rebound significantly better when he's on the court than when he's not. And, you know, compared to, you know, what Pau Gasol was last year, he's going to be a much more solid force on the defensive end. And he's not a disaster offensively. Like, he's not super skilled, but he's at least skilled enough that you can dump it to him around the basket and he'll be able to just put it up. Like, I think he's going to be good. But going back to the point guard thing for a second, I don't know how much opportunity he's really going to have to get minutes, and he might spend more time in the D League, but I was honestly more impressed at Summer League with Spencer Dinwiddie than I was with Jerry.
Yeah, Dinwiddie looked really good. And he was a guy, again, coming out of the draft, slid to the second round because of the ACL injury that he had at Colorado. Never really got a chance in Detroit because, and I don't really know why, because their backup point guard situation was a disaster. You had a rehabbing Brandon Jennings, and you had, you know, 75-year-old Steve Blake running point guard. I don't know why
Dinwiddie lit Derrick Rose up one game a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I remember that. It was towards the end of the season. He had a huge performance. And he's a big guy. He's like, I think he's 6'6". From memory, he can score, he can pass, but he is on a non-guaranteed deal at the moment, is that correct?
Yeah, it was kind of weird what happened with him because they got him in the trade for Cameron Bairstow, who has since been waived by Detroit and has signed back in Australia, which, you know, he was never an NBA player. He never had one single, you know, significant moment as an NBA player, which, I mean, no offense to you because I know you're in Australia, so are you... But, like, he's Cameron Bairstow was not good. So, like, right off the bat, they won that trade. But, like, with Dinwiddie, they waived him right before Summer League started. And what I ended up understanding from, you know, from talking to Hoiberg at Summer League and talking to other people was that they basically just did that because his deal was non-guaranteed. And they just needed that $900,000, that like league minimum money that he was making. They just needed that little bit of extra cap space to get the Wade deal done. And then once he cleared waivers, he was back on their summer league team with the promise from them that he was gonna get back, you know, get signed again and be invited to camp. As of now, yeah, his deal is non-guaranteed, but I think they wouldn't have done all of that and brought him back after waiving him if they didn't plan on giving him every single opportunity to make the roster. So I would say if you made me guess yes or no, I think yes, he will be on the Bulls roster opening day.
Yeah, I think I've got him projected to be on that roster there. And look, I would probably, apart from the shooting, as a general point guard, he's a better player than Cannon at this point. His 3-point shooting is not there, but everything else that he can do, he's much better than Cannon. Ball handler, passer, defender, scorer in other areas. He's a much better fit in that sense, and he's a really, you know, good player to try and develop. I think as I mentioned, like, he missed majority of his rookie season with a knee problem. I think he had shoulder issues in his second season.
He had an ankle thing too at some point, right?
Yeah, he's had a lot of, and maybe that's something that sticks with him. And I'm sure the Bulls love getting injury prone point guards. They're really really keen on that. But we'll see how Dinwiddie works out. But that trade, we don't need to really go over the Derrick Rose portion of it. He's gone. He's done. He did his bit for Chicago. There was a very weird, and we touched on it earlier, just a very weird feeling around Derrick Rose and the way it ebbed and flowed throughout his career. But I'm sure, Sean, you join me in thanking him for all he did for Chicago. And I feel sorry for him at times, despite some of the dumb things that come out of his mouth.
Well, even the dumb things that come out of his mouth, I think it's a lot of it is kind of unfair. Like the other day when he said that, you know, he thinks they have a chance to win every game. He didn't literally mean he thinks they're going to go 82-0. All he was saying is that he thinks every night they're going to go out there and have a chance to compete. Which I feel like every single NBA player, you don't get to the point where you're in the NBA if you don't have that kind of mindset as a competitor. I feel like I'm pretty sure every single player on the Sixers goes into every game and says, we could win this game tonight. Like, none of the players are going to say, oh, well, we're going to lose or we're just so overmatched. I mean, the 17 win Lakers beat the Warriors last year. like stuff happened.
That really, really pissed me off when we saw that about Rose. And the headlines, you know, Derrick Rose predicts that Knicks will beat Warriors record and go 82-0. Like, no, he didn't say that.
No, he didn't say
all.
That.
He didn't say that at all.
And so here's the thing about Derrick. Like, and this is just kind of on a personal level. I don't know him super well because he's the kind of guy, obviously, with everything that he's been through, he doesn't really like to let anybody outside of his inner circle get too close to him. But I mean, I think I had an okay relationship with him. I never got the sense that he actively disliked me, which I think is a positive. My thing with Rose, just from getting to know him a little bit over the last few years, is that people think that he is dumb. And that's not true. I mean, obviously, the whole SAT thing when he was at Memphis didn't help that perception. But he is a perceptive guy. He remembers things about people. He just is not good at articulating things, and he doesn't really think about how what he says is going to be perceived. Because if you even go back to those comments that he made at Media Day last year when he said that he was focused on his upcoming free agency next year. Like, I think in his mind, he probably thought, like, that he said that he wanted his focus on getting that contract so he can take care of his family. And I think what was going through his head was he wants to take care of his family, and that's something that people are going to think is admirable, that people can relate to. And it didn't even cross his mind that nobody really wanted to hear that from somebody who makes as much money as he does already and had missed as many games as he does. So that's kind of what that was. But, you know, I mean, it's easy to kind of make jokes about some of the stuff he says, but he means well.
Yeah, and even with that thing about, you know, the free agency and his family, I could see a situation where in his head he's thinking to himself, okay, I want to get a new big contract. That means that I have to play really well, and that's a positive
right,
for the Bulls.
That's why I don't understand how Bulls fans got mad at him, because what you want, like, you should want Derrick Rose to get a max contract in 2 years back, at least back when he was on the Bulls, because that would mean that he is back to the level that something was something close to what he was in 2011 when he won MVP, because he's... And if he has another season like he did last year, he is not going to get that kind of contract from anybody, even with the spike in the salary cap, because so many teams already have a point guard. I'd have to go through NBA history, but I don't think the point guard position as a whole has ever been deeper in the history of the NBA than it is right now. And I just don't know how many teams are going to be willing to pay him the kind of money that he clearly is going to want in free agency next summer, unless he has like a 2011 repeat year, which I just don't see happening at this point.
Yeah, but I'm with you there completely. All right, let's talk about guys who might be sort of breakout candidates on this team. We've covered a lot of players already, but is there someone you think is going to really turn in a big performance? We've got Doug McDermott heading into his third season, Mirotić heading into his third season, Cristiano Felizio into his second year, who might see a bigger role with, you know, Noah and Gasol no longer on the team, Jerry and Grant. Like, who's a player that you think is going to take a step forward and become a player that people might think, oh, I didn't know he had it in him, or national people might step up and go, well, this guy's actually really good?
Well, Chris Felizio is kind of an obvious, like, deep sleeper guy. I don't know if I would, like, draft him from a fantasy standpoint, because I don't know how many minutes he's going to get. But, you know, unless Bobby Portis plays a lot of center, Chris Felizio is going to get a lot of minutes as backup center. And he, last year, he was, like, once he finally started getting minutes, and this was obviously after Joakim Noah had his season-ending injury, and then Pau Gasol started having some getting banged up and missing some games, and then Chris started getting some opportunities. He's still very raw because he's 20 years old, but he, you know, he can rebound, he can score around the basket, he can score in the pick and roll. Like he is I think he projects long-term as a useful, I don't think he's a starter necessarily, but he's a rotation player in the NBA. He's a rotation big man. So I think he's going to have an opportunity to get minutes. And then McDermott's the other one that's going to be kind of interesting to me, because he is elite at exactly one thing, and that's three-point shooting. He's one of the best three-point shooters in the league, but he's so bad at everything else that it actually makes him a liability on the floor, even though he is so good at shooting. But, you know, if he can get to the point, nobody expects him to become an elite defender at this point, but if he can just get to the point where he isn't running around totally lost, not knowing what to do, if he can get to where he can at least stay in front of his guy, then I think he has a chance to really stay on the floor and earn a lot of minutes and score a lot, because he's such a good shooter.
Yeah, look, he's going to get minutes because of the shooting, but for fantasy, McDermott is really, really poor. Last season, in 23 minutes a game, he combined for one assist, steal, and block per game are combined, and that's
and he's also just a guy for a guy his size. You want him to be a better rebounder too. That's the other thing.
He got 2.4 rebounds. So you rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks. He averaged 3.4 combined in four categories. Now, I don't even have the numbers in front of me, but if I looked at Draymond Green's numbers, he'd be about 15 or 16 for those two things, probably more,
right.
20 for those two things combined. It is horrific that you can be so inept at getting steals or getting an assist or grabbing a rebound or doing anything, because he's not small. Even blocking 0.1 shots a game, like, at least get your hand on a couple of shots or contest them or something. So for fantasy, yeah, he'll score, and he'll score threes, and he'll shoot
like 46% from three.
Beautiful. And he hits millions of his free throws. He just doesn't get to the line. But yeah, he's got an 86% conversion at the line last year. He's got solid field goal percentage at 45 last season. He'll score 10, 11, 12 points. He might hit two threes a game, but he is just non-existent in the other categories. Felizio, I'm glad you brought him up, because last season he played better than Pau Gasol in a few of those games down the stretch last year.
Yeah.
He's a guy that's efficient scoring. You mentioned at the rim, in pick and roll. He hits his free throws as well, which is not something you can count on for lots of big guys. So you get a guy who's a 58% shooter and then a 74, 75% guy from the line. That's great for fantasy too. He's a guy that can be, if he played decent minutes, he's a double-double average sort of guy who can block shots. And we saw, even in summer, like he had games where he just didn't miss field goals. Like he went 8 for 8 in one game. And then I think he had another game where he was close to perfect as well. Decent finisher. And I could see a situation that in the future he becomes a low-end starter in the league. Maybe like a Robin Lopez. Now, Lopez is better than people give him credit for. But I could see no reason why Felice couldn't get to close to Lopez's level at some point in his career.
No, it's not unreasonable to expect. And I know he's somebody that the Bulls organization and the front office and the coaching staff likes a lot. You have to remember, nobody knew who this kid was last year. He was just kind of some random kid who made their team off of Summer League. He was just one of those guys who, because, you know, usually whenever like there's a Summer League team for a team, like the roster is like the three guys who were first round picks in the last couple of drafts and then a bunch of just random dudes who have no chance of making the team. And Brent Felicio, when he was on the Bulls Summer League roster last year, was just kind of one of those other guys that they just picked up to fill out the roster. And he impressed them enough that back in July, it wasn't like he was just a camp invite. Back in July, they signed him already to a training camp invite. And I had kind of expected, okay, they're going to waive him because they usually don't like to carry 15 players. But, you know, that's cool. He got a camp invite. And then he actually made the team. So it's clearly he's somebody that they, as an organization, are invested in, and they like him, and they think that he can develop into a solid player. So I think he's going to get opportunities.
Yeah, look, last year at Summer League, I remember seeing that news, because the news came through that they'd signed him to a deal while Summer League was going on, and I saw that
right,
things were signed for Leeds. I go, what? Who's this? And then I had to make sure that when I was watching the Bulls, I paid attention, because as you said, you know, 10 of the guys on a Summer League roster are just nobodies who you never hear again until you get back there next year and Terran Pettaway is on a different team with his headband and multicolored knee pads. And you go, okay, well, Terran Pettaway's back. That's cool. He's here in Summer League. And then Felicio was signed. I went, okay, I'm going to have to actually watch what this guy's doing, because I'd seen the Bulls play and I just paid no attention to him. So I went, okay, he's just a random unknown Brazilian guy that I'm never going to hear from again.
Right, and then he makes the team, and you're like, okay, they must see something in this guy. And then, of course, he doesn't play much during the first bit of the season, and he doesn't even really get to go to the D-League because, again, last year they didn't have their own D-League team, and I think they sent him down there once, but it was just while he was they had to send him to Texas because that was the team that had an open roster spot. But, you know, now that they have their own D-League team, I think that's going to be huge for their young guys, with both him and Paul Zipser and maybe even Valentine or Dinwiddie. Like, those guys, since they have a team now that's going to be playing in the suburbs, they can send those guys down for a practice, or if the D-League team is playing on an off day, they can send them down there and play them and just get some reps in. Like, I think that's going to be huge for those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Watching the Windy City Bulls this season is going to be really interesting, just to see these, like, see Zipser, see Dinwiddie, see Valentine, see whoever is out there, just to see them playing together, because it'll be very similar to the way the Bulls Summer League team was, which, again, it was a little bit, they won the championship, well done, because they had so many guys who do have potential to be NBA rotation players on that squad, and the Windy City Bulls will be similar, much like the way the Raptors used their D-League team last year with DeLon Wright down there, Norman Powell down there, Beben Oguera, all those, and they're going to do the similar thing this year, because they'll have Pascal Siakam down there playing some minutes. Jakob Poeltl may play down there for some time, and they'll be able to run these young players down there, and I think that the Bulls, it's great they've got the team, and that will really help the development, and we've seen it work brilliantly for the Raptors. There's one player left that I want to really talk about. I think we've covered everyone else, Sean, and that is Tony Snell. Tony Snell, he's pretty bad. I'll say that. But
he's not good.
But for some reason, the advanced stats for him last season made him out to be an all-defensive first-teamer. The Bulls were so much better with him on the court than they were with him off it, yet he provides less than zero offensively. I don't know what he was doing to make those advanced stats make him look good, but I feel that he is really going to struggle to get into the rotation.
That was an inside joke among Bulls Twitter that Tony Snell is the plus minus god, because he would have one of the best plus minuses on the team. But
it was
he's just, he's not, but yeah, he's not good. I something would have to go very badly wrong from an injury standpoint or performance standpoint from somebody else, in order for Tony Snell to get anything more than garbage minutes this season.
Last, like, you talk about inside jokes with Bulls Twitter in the fantasy community. Any time that Butler would go down with an injury, and that's something that happens pretty often these days, that Butler misses basically 20 games every season. But everyone, I just get flooded with questions. Oh, I have to go and make sure I grab Tony Snell. I'll be like, it doesn't matter. Tony Snell can play. He can play 30 minutes. He'll score 8 points and have 2 rebounds and do nothing. And
That's on the high end of his production.
He'd have one game and he'd go out there and he'd hit 4 threes and have 16 points and everyone would go, oh my God, Tony Snell, yes, he's getting his opportunity. And then he'd combine in the next 4 games for 8 points. And you go, this is actual Tony Snell. There'll be one game out of 10 where he goes off and then that's it.
And it's always against like the Sixers or somebody.
Exactly. He played 20 minutes a game last year, which is just staggering to me that he got 20 minutes per night and scored 5 points. And we talk about McDermott not being able to register any stats. In those 20 minutes, he was only at 0.3 steals. For a guy that's this great defender, in 20 minutes to get 0.3 steals, you have to be actively not looking to get steals. When your role is as a defender, your role is be a defender, create turnovers. You're on the court for 20 minutes and you still can't even get anywhere close to win a game. He shot 37% from the field. He can't dribble. He can't handle the ball. I'm very, very anti Tony Snell. As if you can't tell, Sean.
Well, because you've watched him play.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
He's not good.
He's really not good. He will. I don't think that he gets a restricted free agency tender.
I don't think he's going to. Yeah, no, I don't. I think he would be out of the league now if the Bulls hadn't picked up his option before last year. And in fact, I honestly wouldn't be surprised if he is like if they make a move at the deadline and they need to clear a roster spot, if he's just kind of bought out, because he's not somebody at this point. They've given him a lot of opportunities to be productive and he just hasn't been. So it's not like he's somebody who, like, he's just not getting an opportunity. And if he goes to another team, he'll somehow be good and then come back to haunt the Bulls for letting him go. He's had his opportunities to play and he just has not been good. And I feel like going forward after this year, he's not going to get a qualifying offer from the Bulls, and he's probably going to be one of those guys that either goes overseas or gets a training camp invite from a team and tries to compete for one of the 14th or 15th roster spots on someone else's team. But I from a fantasy standpoint, I would not be the one to do that.
He's probably going to come down to Australia and win the MVP down here, and then I'll be
making. There you go. He can reunite with Cam Bairstow.
Yes, he can. Now, I think Bairstow's playing in Brisbane, I believe.
They were college teammates at New Mexico.
They were. Now Bairstow will. I'm sure Bairstow will tear up the NBL down here, and we've got some decent. I'm really excited to see Terrence Ferguson down here. Actually, I can't wait to see him when he comes to my hometown and get out there and see him play. But we've got some Bairstow's here and Ferguson's there, and a couple of. Interesting players have been down the NBL, and I think we'll see more players coming down to Australia, players who want to forego college or players who maybe second-round draft choices come down. We had Marcus Thornton from the Celtics come down last season as well.
Wait, this is the other Marcus Thornton, right? Because there's the Marcus Thornton that was on like the Pelicans and the Kings and the Rockets. So this is the other Marcus Thornton.
This
right?
is the one that looks like Predator, with the long dreads. And he had an incident here last where he went. I don't know if he was going for a steal or a rebound, and he crashed into the advertising hoardings behind the rim. And as he was sort of slumped there, a guy in the crowd poured a beer over his head.
Well, man, I feel like I need to pay more attention to Australian basketball. It seems like there's some stuff that happens there.
Well, that was one of the more humorous things. And there's all the footage of him getting escorted out by two policemen grabbing him. Thornton's just looking up, going, "What is happening?" As he's just covered in liquid. It was a bizarre scene, and I'll have to find the video for it, because it's definitely something where you just don't expect a guy to be laying on the court and just have someone pour a beer over his head. It was pretty bizarre. But I'll find the video and I'll send it to you. All right, Sean.
Yeah, that would be great. I want to see that.
Bold prediction for this team. Whatever you want to do. What's their record? Are they going to make the playoffs? Are they going to make a trade? Is there going to be some sort of Snapchat controversy? What's your bold prediction for this team?
Well, you can never rule out a Snapchat controversy, especially now Jimmy Butler is on the Olympic team. He was hanging out with Draymond Green for 2 weeks in Rio. But as far as how I think they're going to do this season, I think anywhere from 37 to 43 wins is a reasonable range to expect. I could see them getting the 8th seed. I think they'll be. I'm more just excited for how Fred Hoiberg is going to manage the personalities with Rondo, Wade, and Butler together and kind of trying to make all that work. If he's going to try to manage those relationships or he's going to be a little bit more hands off, that's going to be kind of the storyline I'll be watching.
Yeah, that's it's definitely going to be interesting because there's some pretty strong personalities in that locker room, and if you can get them to mesh and take on different roles that they're maybe used to, maybe it works. But that bottom of the Eastern Conference, even the middle of the Eastern Conference, it's so tight. After the top three teams, you can go from 3 to like 13, and I could make arguments for any of them finishing in the playoffs. Yeah, people will talk to me, oh, the Knicks are definitely a lock for the playoffs. Like, cool, then who's
no, out? They're not a lock, because if you think about it, it's really like Cleveland, obviously, and then Boston and Toronto, and then you've got, like, I know this is a little bit off track, but I kind of think the fourth best team in the East is Detroit.
Okay.
I really like Detroit.
I can understand arguments for Detroit. I think I had Charlotte as my fourth team there. I can understand.
Like Charlotte, too. Charlotte's good. I think Atlanta is going to be better than people think, because I think, obviously, from a talent standpoint, Dwight Howard is a downgrade from Al Horford, but I think he fits better next to Millsap than Horford did.
Because he's going to be able to address their issues that they had in terms of being
the worst. They were like the third worst rebounding team in the league last year, and that's the one thing that Dwight Howard can still do consistently at an elite level.
And he can provide some level. And Horford's a good defender in a different sense, but Millsap is also a defender in more of the Horford sense, whereas Howard is more of a guy that's going to be protecting the rim there as well. Plus, they'll get Tiago Splitter, hopefully, back. And Splitter is a really good player that is tremendously underrated if he can get his calf and back and whatever other issues he's had, which is still not known at this point, but he is an addition to that team. They bolstered their wing core by drafting a couple of guys, Bembry and Prince, who can contribute somewhat. Schroeder's an upgrade on Teague defensively. Offensively, probably not, but there's just a change in what they do. So they're in the mix there. The Wizards, Indy. The Bulls, Indiana, the Heat.
I don't like Washington at all. I just think I think this Wall Beal stuff is worrying, and they also just the other thing is with Beal, like, and also with Wall, like, I mean, have you seen the stuff about Wall's
his knee?
Knees? Yeah. Like, it seems like it's worse than it was originally reported to be. I'm very worried about the Wizards.
I'm worried about Wall's knee as well. There's the stuff that he is targeting opening night. Whenever someone says targeting opening
night, that's not good, especially for somebody who had surgery on both knees over the summer. And at the time, they were just like, yeah, it's fine. But then, like, that report from Candace Buckner last week was just like, it actually was worse than people thought. And it's like, oh, that's not ideal.
It takes me back to Kyrie Irving last season when all the talk about his knee is, oh, yeah, we're not ruling out opening night just yet. Cool. And that means then 2 months later, then he finally comes back. And that's the sort of vibe I'm getting from Warner.
Well, remember a couple of years ago, Danilo Gallinari, like, he had the ACL right at the end of that one season, and then he missed, like, the next season, but then like halfway through the season, like, they messed up, like, they came out like they had messed up his surgery, so he had to have the surgery again on the same knee.
Because they did some sort of, or there was something that they didn't do surgery. They were trying some novel method of
trying some, like, thing, and then that fell apart, and so they were just like, okay, now we have to just do the surgery. That's like that's the kind of stuff where you're just like, this is not good. The Wall stuff worries me. But anyway, the point being, there's like six teams that we can pretty confidently say in the East are going to be in the playoffs. Yep. And so there's really only two spots that are going to be open. And that's for teams like the Bulls, the Knicks, the Bucks, the
Magic, maybe.
Well, I'm very, very not high.
They want to be in that spot. I don't think they will, because I think it is just one of the more confusing off seasons that we've seen in recent memory. It just doesn't.
I think Miami's going to be in there if Bosch plays, but I'm still. I know there's all been all this stuff this week about, you know, he wants to play, he's been working out again, but I'm just, everything I've read and heard and talked to people about with the blood clots and stuff, that is just not anything to play around with. I'd be very surprised if he actually played again.
Yeah, I'm leaning that way. And the Heat just don't seem like they're in any frame of mind to say, cool, just go for it. They just
they shouldn't be, because literally, exactly. If you're taking these blood thinners, you literally could die on the court. It's not just a matter of, like, oh, you know, he has this knee injury, and if he plays, he could, you know, further injure this knee. This is literally a life and death decision. And so if you're the Heat, yeah, why would you do that? Because what if something happens to him? Then you have that on your conscience forever, and you have to sell to free agents, you know. Yeah, this is, I mean, obviously the most important thing is you don't want the guy to die, but then, like, going forward, you don't want to sell it to free agents. Look, we knew that this guy had a life-threatening condition and we still let him play.
Exactly. There's so many questions about that situation, and I who knows when it's going to get resolved. It'll have to get resolved in the next couple of months, but we just don't know. It's not looking great at this point. Let's before we go, Sean, we have a question coming from Mark Karantzoulis. He says, and he's a I think he's a Bulls writer as well. I can't remember what site he writes for, and he hosts a Bulls podcast too. He says, in which area, in terms of efficiency, will the Bulls struggle more, offense and defense? So he's a positive Bulls fan, much like I am at the moment.
I would say defense, because if you look at their roster, they have three players that are known to be good defensive players, and that's Jimmy Butler, Taj Gibson, Robin Lopez. Everybody else is either neutral or bad.
Yep, and that's it. Yeah,
and
that's
you don't know position. How much those guys are all going to be on the floor together at the same time, and Taj Gibson is a guy who's probably going to be coming off the bench, and he has injury concerns, and he might get traded at the deadline if the season falls apart. Defensively, I just do not see this team being good.
Yeah, that's probably the way I'd be leaning as well. It's just there's so many concerns, but it's going to make it fun from a perspective of, look, how is this working? And we're obviously going to be watching, but other people should be tuning in just to see exactly how this all fits. There's plenty of repercussions.
It'll be entertaining.
It is going to be very entertaining. There's no way that you can say that it won't be entertaining, even if it's just watching people who can't shoot threes just clang them off the front of the rim, like Rondo, like Wade, like Butler, all these guys. Look, we might see Robin Lopez start stretching it out just because they need someone to do it. And it, you know what? It might not even be worse than some of the other guys taking three-pointers. That's how the situation may devolve. Sean, thank you for coming on. It was great to chat to you, great to chat Bulls with you. Remind everyone where they can find you on Twitter and all of your other media endeavors.
Well, I'm on Twitter at Hyken, H-I-G-H-K-I-N. That's my last name. So, follow me on there. And, I'll link to all of my work there at various outlets. Right now, I'm covering the Bulls for Bleacher Report, NBC, and the NBA for NBC Sports. I do some stuff for Dime also. But, it's kind of at the point of the season where there's a lot of stuff that's up in the air. So I don't want to, say anything definitively right now. But just follow me on Twitter and you'll be up to date on what I'm up to. And obviously, if you're a Bulls fan, check out the Locked on Bulls podcast that I co-host with Cody Westerlund and leave us a 5-star review in iTunes.
Yes, do that for Sean and Cody's podcast. Do that for this podcast as well. 5-star review. And give
5-star reviews all around.
Yep, everyone, just dish out. It doesn't take long. It takes 10 seconds to go in there. And as I've said, people on this podcast, if you want to go in there, give it 5 stars. Leave one word. Just write great. And I'm happy with that.
You don't even have to leave a review. You just have to rate it 5 stars. They don't even make you write a review. Just give us 5 stars.
Yeah, it says review optional, I'm pretty sure, on iTunes. But
yeah,
do whatever you want. I am very thankful to everyone who's done that. Let's help get the new Locked on Bulls podcast up in the iTunes rankings as well. Follow Sean on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter at @redrock_bball. Don't forget, Basketball Monster will be opening the site with our projections Monday, the 4th of September. We've pushed it back a couple of days. So 4th of September, the site will be opening. We have to accept your memberships. You can check out all our projections. You can tell me how wrong I am. I look forward to all those tweets. So make sure you're checking out the site. Sean, thank you once again.
Yeah, this was good to talk to you, man.
No worries. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.